Welcome back, college basketball fans, to another Hoops HD report coming to you here. We are recording this on the evening of Monday, December 3rd. I'm your host up here in the top corner, Chad Sherwood, joined by Joby Fortson, the puppet David Griggs, and back with us again from Bracketeer.org, Rocco Miller. Gentlemen, good evening. How are we tonight?
We're great, and there's no Kyle Lamb this week. Thank God.
Thank God on that. We do have a lot to get to. There's been a lot of exciting action over the past week, from the ACC Big Ten Challenge to the start of conference play in the Big Ten. Real big week for the Big Ten and the ACC.
Yeah, and it was a real busy weekend. And again, Saturday's all college basketball season long. It is just a huge, big slate of games. We kind of hadn't had that until this Saturday. At the the first week of the year, you typically get that on Friday because that's the night the season opens, or I guess it's a Tuesday now. And then the next 2 weeks, you have the exempt tournament. So there's a lot of good games, but nothing like what we saw here. And I'm just pulling this up. This is giving a shout out here to our good friend Matt Sars. Well, we like him. I don't know what he thinks of us, but he breaks down everything. He has all the media guides, and you see, this is a Saturday. That is all the games that were played, all the games that were on TV. It is. Do you all use this? Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
It's just a guide. Great, it's got great site, great links with anything else. Because sometimes there's so many games on a satellite package or a streaming package, it's just hard to keep up with. And even anything that's on VMI Longwood, there was the Chicago battle. And did you see this on Fox Sports North at 4 o'clock? We had live on television strength and conditioning coach Andy Hendurahan from Georgia State, or George Mason. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks to Matt Sar Sports. Check that out if you need the links to Andy Hendurahan's game.
Yeah.
Very confused at the moment. I do not think that what I saw on his site, but let's go ahead and pull up the standings here, and we will go ahead and discuss a lot of the games that have happened and all the events, and we will start things off in the ACC. That and Joby, you there, you being our ACC guy, I want to start with you. Almost surprising, given what we've seen out of the Big Ten, that the ACC was able to salvage a split in the ACC Big Ten Challenge.
Well, a lot of the games went the exact opposite, you would think. For instance, Virginia Tech, it was a surprise. Penn State beating Virginia Tech is nothing short of a surprise, given the performance Virginia Tech has given today. But then out of nowhere, hey, and of course, your Rutgers Knights, which I will let you discuss in more detail. But then all of a sudden, you have Boston College actually winning a game against a quality opponent. So it's like, what is this? And Syracuse coming up strong on the road against Ohio State. So it was a season. Both sides had their surprises. Both sides had their disappointments. Shows the Big Ten is a solid conference. But I would still put down that the ACC is the strength of the nation right now.
Yeah, and the feature games excluded, like Duke and Indiana, and what was the other feature
game? North Carolina, Michigan.
Yeah, North Carolina, Michigan.
Looked great, by the way.
Yeah. feature games excluded. There were some really exciting ball games all throughout the Big Ten ACC Challenge, probably the most fun that we've had it with it that I can remember, and some really big wins. Virginia going on the road, getting the big win at Maryland. They're better than Maryland. You would expect them to beat Maryland, but the fact that they won at Maryland and kept them at arm's length the way that they did, I'm still all in on this Virginia team. And then how about Louisville? I know that it was a home game, but a big, big win against a top 10 opponent. And when was the last time? It's been years since Louisville felt good about anything in any sport.
And then they followed that up over the weekend with the win at Seton Hall as well, David. Yeah. It's a real nice win for the nice week for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
So good for them and good for Chris Mack there.
Yeah, and let's talk about Pittsburgh real quick. I mean, they went into Iowa, played a great game, really impressive showing against the Hawkeyes, who are really good. And then so I thought Pittsburgh was back.
They whipped Duquesne.
Yeah, they whipped Duquesne.
And they gave the ACC a loss in the ACC Metro Athletic Conference.
Yes. Pittsburgh is back.
the Metro Athletic conference challenge versus the ACC is one for the Mac.
Tonight, Pitt down over 10 points at one point, came storing back, missed, had a ball go three quarters of the way down the net in the final seconds, did not stay in. Niagara, who's bad by a bad conference's standards, pulls out the win at Pitt. So much for Pitt being back, though. Rocco, let me bring you here, though, on the other two big games for the challenge, though. What about what Michigan did to North Carolina, first of all, or what maybe North Carolina didn't do against Michigan?
Yeah, Chad. Well, I was, of course, at the game, so I got a chance to see him firsthand. North Carolina, you know, coming out on the court in the first 5-10 minutes, they're by far the most athletic-looking team I've seen in years, just with my own eyes, with, you know, not watching on TV. And you're expecting a lot from them, and there was some very impressive plays early on, but Michigan just slowly wore them down. They've got such a great coach, of course, Coach Beilein, but the defensive adjustments and the different adjustments they made offensively just kind of baffled North Carolina, and they couldn't bounce back. And then things just – it stretched from like a 5-point lead to a 10 to a 15 to a 20. Next thing you know, North Carolina's down 20. You guys probably saw Roy Williams' post-game press conference. It was all over ESPN. And, I think he was incredibly frustrated. And so this team, you know, they've got a ton of talent. They've got a lot of time to get it worked out. But there's some guys with some attitudes that they got to try to get to mesh. And so they've got a lot to work on, I think. But Michigan was so impressive that I think they could do that to a lot of top 25 teams, not just North Carolina. So pretty interesting and fun game to be at. And then, Chad, I think you asked me about one other one. I lost track.
The other game I want to bring up was Ohio State, who we thought was starting to really play well, losing at home to Syracuse by 10, a Syracuse team that I thought was struggling and suddenly completely turned their season around, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's a win they needed. They obviously went to MSG and lost twice against both Oregon and Connecticut. And those losses, I think, got Coach Boeheim scratching his head. But, you know, when Syracuse's back's against the wall, they're almost like even more, a lot more dangerous to play against than when they're coming in riding a little bit of a high, just because they do a lot of adjusting, and then they kind of figure out where their gaps are in their zone defense. And I think Ohio State's got a lot of newcomers this year they're trying to mix in. It was kind of a perfect storm there for Syracuse to come in and steal a win, and that's what happened. So you can't overlook Syracuse. And I think by the end of the year, especially what, you know, we'll get to Iowa later, but the four teams that were in that tournament, we could at the end of the year be in a situation where Syracuse was still the best team in the four, but they actually lost both games. And so Iowa didn't have the benefit of playing against them, so they have nothing to show for it at the end. We could be dealing with a situation like that.
Well, we also may have exposed a major weakness, though, in Ohio State here. If you watch them play Samford earlier in the year, they struggled against mightily. Samford, who doesn't play zone, played zone that entire game. And then to see Syracuse go in there, which is one of the best zone defenses in the nation, and just, you know, and beat them by 10. The book might be out on the Buckeyes also, though.
Right. And I think I was the most impressed with this result. Impressed / surprised. Because of how well Ohio State had been playing, minus the Samford game that you mentioned. I mean, they went to Creighton, not an easy place at all to win, and won. They went to Cincinnati in what was a real showcase game for that Cincinnati program, a good team opening a new arena, won. If you missed that game, do not go back and watch it. It is painful on the retinas. It was a really ugly game. But a really impressive win there. And then, like, to come home and like, lose to a team that, like you said, had been struggling. And, wow, what an improvement out of Syracuse that we've seen.
Joby, I want to run one more team by you here. Miami, who we thought was a potential tournament team, loses to Yale. I still figured out what happened to that game.
I don't know which is worse, Miami or losing to Yale or at home to – but as we speak, he's playing Wisconsin tight, so on the road. But I wonder if the distractions are just too much. Yeah, you know, I mean,
something. Yeah,
they're one of the programs that obviously are caught up in the FBI scandal and the shoe scandal, and you know, is the bloom off the rose for Larinaga on as this great, you know, guy? Is he involved in a lot of this? There's questions around that. I wonder if there is a distraction at Miami. And at the end of the day, they might have just lost too much stuff, you know, with Rodriguez gone and, you know, some of their, you know, the foundational guys might be gone. Maybe that locker room just isn't right now with everything swirling.
Well, and I think they should have lost to Fresno State. I don't know if you guys watched that game. They were down pretty big there, and Fresno State kind of handed it to them at the end in the tournament.
Yeah, they did.
Semifinal game, yeah. So they could be looking at a 4-game losing streak if they would have ended up losing there. But the three losses to all Seton Hall, Rutgers, Yale all came down to the wire. So they're only about 9 points away from being undefeated still. So I wouldn't mark them off yet. I mean, they're clearly not getting blown out or anything. It's really just perhaps a couple tweaks and a couple, you know, figuring out how to close out games, those types of things. So we got a long way to go. The jury's definitely out on this team.
Yeah, speaking of, they're 9 points away from being undefeated, and David, you know, Wake Forest is 10 points away from being able to beat a bad Richmond team.
Yes, I was about to say, you know, the jury is not out on Wake Forest. In fact, let's not talk about Wake Forest. Let's just move on to the Battle of Riverside. Let's get into it.
Now we're going to take a quick look at the upcoming schedule there.
I got excited.
The ACC. We've got, as part of the Jimmy V class coming up Tuesday night here, the Notre Dame and Oklahoma game. I still don't know what to make of this Notre Dame team. They are 6-1, but I'm not feeling it for them.
I'm the same way, Chad. They're 6-1, and you kind of have to sit up and take notice of that. But like every time I turn on my television and Notre Dame's playing, I just kind of shrug. I'm not writing them off. How can you? They're 6-1, but I don't think they're going to be there at the end. Now, again, Oklahoma, another team with a bloated record, but I'm kind of questioning them as well. Even though that they've been winning their games, I don't think they've been beating particularly good teams, and they haven't been winning impressively. So is this kind of a pumped-up pillow fight, or are these two teams really good tomorrow?
I think Florida was a decent win for Oklahoma, in the tournament in Atlantis. We can say, well, it's Florida pumped up.
We're splitting hairs at this point. You can say that about.
At some point, you beat somebody, you beat somebody, you beat somebody. Somebody has to be good somewhere along the line.
Sort of. Right, yeah.
And so I think I actually think Oklahoma, right now, I feel pretty good about them to what they've done to date. I'm not saying they're going to be in the tournament, et cetera, Big 12 stuff. But Notre Dame, I'd echo everything people have said.
And Rocco, this weekend, though, is going to be – I mean, we've got a great slate of games involving ACC teams. If you look at what's coming up here on Saturday and even the VCU-Virginia game on Sunday, but Georgetown, yeah. Syracuse, Pitt, West Virginia, Clemson, Mississippi State. I mean, your thoughts on this? What we got this weekend in the ACC?
I'm excited. There's a few great ones in there. I know Joby's pumped for VCU-Virginia just because even though Virginia is, of course, a class or two above VCU these days, you know, VCU is going to give them everything they got, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm intrigued by Louisville at Indiana. Louisville's coming, as David mentioned earlier, off of a great week for them to be able to beat Michigan State and then win on the road at Seton Hall, now go to Bloomington. Might be too tall of a task, but they've got the confidence coming in, so we'll see how that plays out. I think just from a Pac-12 perspective, UCLA needs to be able to beat Notre Dame, but that's a roll of the dice at this point. Florida State, Connecticut's intriguing in a neutral court scenario, and then Clemson against Mississippi State. Clemson's coming off two tough tests where they couldn't pass the test when they lost to both Creighton and Nebraska. Can't beat that state, as you guys talked about last week. Now they've got another shot. I think they need to show that they can get one of these big wins. They got a better schedule this year. Now they got to do something about it.
This Pitt West Virginia game, I think it has lost quite a bit of heat. It's still heated, but I think it just didn't. Now, part of that was when it was renewed last year after a bit of a hiatus. It wasn't a conference game, A, that always is going to take something away from a really good rivalry, and B, Pitt was just flat-out awful. You kind of wanted to say that, God, if Pitt goes to West Virginia and wins, they might be sold out for the rest of the year, but is it still the backyard brawl? Is it still – because – this rivalry, I know it didn't resonate nationally the way some of them do, but it was a whole, at least regionally, it had a whole different level of nastiness to it that I don't think is there anymore.
I think it could be a fun game, but I guess what prom has been is, you know, the disparity between the teams, and that can really hurt a rivalry too.
Yeah.
But let's go over to the other half of the ACC Big Ten challenges. A little bit more of a look at the Big Ten. I know we discussed
the Battle of Riverside. Here we go.
First of all, I want to welcome John Titel into the podcast as well. You can see him over there on the screen somewhere. So John T, how are you? Thanks for joining us. As we move over to the rest of, we already discussed most of these ACC Big Ten challenge games, but the other thing that happened in Big Ten was starting Friday night and even going on through this evening is the early conference games. And, Rocco, let me go back to you here. Did you have a chance to catch any of these games? There were some pretty good ones, including that. I thought that Wisconsin-Iowa game was a ton of fun on Friday night.
Yeah, I read the recap, saw the highlights. Unfortunately, didn't get to see it live. The game between Minnesota and Oklahoma State was an interesting one. I did watch that game. They were testing out the U.S. Bank Stadium for the Final Four purposes, and they couldn't get the cameras correct. Minnesota had their way with Oklahoma State, but then I think that was a disadvantage for Minnesota because then just a day and a half later, they had to play a little bit earlier in the day game on the road in Columbus against Ohio State, and I don't know. Some of these adjustments they've had to make to do a 20-game schedule for the Big Ten, and this was an issue last year because they did it last year too in order to have the garden for the tournament. They're giving these teams about 3 games in 7-day windows or 4 games in 8-day windows, and this was a 2- and 3-day window. I think there's more that's coming throughout the next couple months if you look ahead to the schedule. It really kind of gives the team traveling a huge disadvantage. Maybe a betting tip for our betting viewers, but like I don't like the format. I don't think it's a fair opportunity to get a road win for Minnesota in this case.
Well, I don't like the format either, largely because if you said, but to build on that, I think it takes away from a lot of out of conference games, and you know you like to see those in November and December, and you know how I think a lot of teams in Ohio State. Not to single them out, but a lot of teams that would like to schedule certain showcase games, like Ohio State had mentioned wanting say a series with Xavier and possibly Dayton. That's going to be hard to do when you have so few games to work with.
Exactly.
Joby, I want to mention this Michigan State team. We mentioned them the loss to Louisville earlier, but they then against Rutgers. Rutgers was in that game most of the way. Rutgers also giving Wisconsin, as we record this, a test on the road, although Wisconsin is up right now. But Michigan State wins that game and then completely demolishes Iowa this evening. An Iowa team that we're just talking about.
I'm shocked. Good. Sparty, I don't think at least my projection of this conference will turn true because I think Michigan's darn good. I think everybody thinks Michigan's darn good. I thought Michigan State would run away with the title here. That's not going to happen. Michigan will go toe-to-toe, but Sparty's a good team. They always start off slow, though. I think it's part of Izzo's. He wants to implement the system. He wants it in place. It always seems you see like you have a number one or two seeded Michigan State team with 8 losses. It seems like that comes in, and it's because they're going to be playing well. The more and more time goes on, the more and more time you give Izzo time, Michigan State is someone you do not want to mess with in February and March.
Well, Titel, let me bring you in here just generally about the Big Ten. You see their rankings this today. I think it's 6 teams in the top 25, or maybe even 8 teams in the top 25 of at least one poll. 9 teams in the top 50. The net is this looking like the best conference so far to you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't think so, only because when I think the top of the conference can compete with the top of any conference, but when you add in a Illinois and Iowa team, I think that really brings down the conference quite a bit. Penn State, I really had high hopes for this year, and they've been underwhelming. The top of the conference is obviously the 2 Michigan schools, but I don't think, at least I didn't see Maryland and Nebraska being this good this early. Obviously, like, still non-conference play, and they both have some very big non-conference games left. But I'm very happily impressed that they're each 7-1 so far.
Well, and Tata, let me stick with you. I got out here on the right-hand side of the screen there, the upcoming schedule. As we mentioned, that Rutgers-Wisconsin game going on right now, but we still have a lot more conference games coming up this week, even in heading into the weekend, and then a few non-conference games as well. Is there anything that you're really circling here on this schedule?
I'm keeping it local in College Park. Maryland has to go to Purdue on Thursday and then come back 48 hours later and host, I say host Loyola Chicago. I believe it's a neutral site game in Baltimore that I thought about going to, but probably not because our budget is whittling down. As far as non-conference games, the Creighton-Nebraska game is going to be fantastic, I think.
That and Wisconsin-Marquette, a couple of good rivalry games on Saturday here.
Yeah, Creighton-Nebraska, it pains me to say this, and the dark web is largely responsible for this, but it has been downgraded to a feud. When you lose 14 in a row or whatever it is, you're no longer a team's rival. I mean, Nebraska needs to win this to kind of salvage the rivalry. It's still a feud. They still don't like each other. But yeah, it's sort of like out-of-conference rivalry weekend. We see a couple more there. DePaul-Northwestern, that should be fun.
Yeah. But the Wisconsin-Marquette game, I think it could be a good one, too.
It really is, and that's a big one, too, because both those teams pretty good. That one's got some heat to it.
One other game, Rocco, on Sunday, Purdue at Texas. Intriguing game there?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Texas lost to Radford, of course, last week. Purdue lost, I think, twice last week, right? So
they did, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to both be pretty hungry for a win. Purdue, a great road win opportunity. Yeah, that one should come down to the wire. Be good entertainment.
Yeah.
Now, what about Rutgers at Fordham, Chad? I got to put it back on you.
Rutgers, I don't know that they're going to finish off many of these games, but they're a lot more competitive in these games this year. They did finish off Miami, of course, but we're right there with Michigan State. Even as we record this, they're only down 5 to Wisconsin with 2.5 left. So,
yeah.
If you hear me screaming about 10, 15 minutes, you know why.
Yeah. If you look at Purdue's profile, I don't think that there's a sense of urgency yet, but there's nothing good on it yet. For as good as they are and as well as they've played, they actually don't have a big caliber win that I think the committee is going to value yet. But they're still good. I think that win's coming. It may come Sunday.
Right. Let's head over to the Big East. And Titel, you are just back from Big East Hoops, I believe, this evening. So you want to give us a little report on the team that is second there on the list?
The Georgetown Hoyas are 7-1. They're only lost to I believe, still unbeaten Loyola Marymount team.
They lost last night. UCLA beat them pretty bad. But
yeah. Read the internet, John. Such a great team. Like, they have so many young, good pieces. The freshman backcourt of Akinjo McClung tonight was great at scoring and shooting. I think they each had like 3 or 4 turnovers, though, which is par for the course for a freshman. Estigo Van, I still believe, is the Big East Player of the Year. Another double-double tonight. He made a couple threes. I mean, the guy does everything on the court. That being said, I believe Georgetown's last 6 wins are each by 10 or less, and they're not against the most competitive schedules you might have heard on the show. So I don't know how they're going to do once we get into the meat of Big East play. But for now, like, they're getting wins against, if not top 100 teams. I don't think they're beating up on, like, the bottom 300 teams. I think, like, solid average mid-major teams.
Well, thanks to Wake Forest, Richmond is no longer a 300.
Joby, Villanova back in the rankings at 21 here. But they played LaSalle, who is winless still.
Yeah.
Pretty lousy on Saturday.
Villanova's a tournament team. They are. They had the hiccups against Furman. And you know what? If you're going to bash Villanova for the North Carolina game or for the Michigan game, you better bash North Carolina too. Yeah. You know, I mean, Villanova's fine. They're not the number one seed level team that I and a lot of people thought they were. But they're still, they're going to fight for protected seed, but man, what are you doing? It shows that they really, really did lose a lot. I think I referred to the locker room earlier in Miami. I think they've lost some in the locker room. Booth has not been the leader that I thought he'd be, at least behind the scenes. Or you don't play around with a LaSalle. I don't care about Big Five. That's crap. It's LaSalle. It's an 0-8 LaSalle. I mean, it's unacceptable in any circumstance, regardless of where it's played, and the fact they're from the same city.
Yeah, and with Furman getting into the rankings, I saw, like John Tuttle just mentioned this in the chat, we have a secret chat that only we can see. You all, people watching, aren't cool enough to look at it. But Furman's in the top 25. So, like, while that's a game you would expect them to win, you're not really holding your nose the way you were maybe the night.
Yeah, but David, Furman's only in the top 25 because they won that game.
Right.
you gotta remember this. Had Villanova won that game, this would not be a quality loss.
Little trouble with a Western Carolina team that's probably a little bit worse than LaSalle, but they
doubled up Bob Jones University, that bastion of talent.
I gotta not to hijack the hosting from Chad, but I'm dying to ask you, Joby, about the Johnnies, who are 10th in your JNG.
Yes,
and who I'm just not. They've won all their games, but my God, they have sweated out some games against bad teams. But
yeah, the Johnnies also, you know, they beat a really game Georgia Tech. Okay, your point's made.
David,
pull them up, Chad. Can we get their profile up here?
Yeah, I was like, one of the answers to St. John's, though, David, is there are undefeated teams of the nation that are not in the top 25, and they are one of them. So I don't think
I would vote for them if I had a vote, which I should. I don't know why the AP.
I'll say this at Rutgers. I mean, we've been talking about Rutgers. They did boat race Rutgers.
Yeah, they're the only team that's boat race.
Rutgers is challenging Wisconsin as we speak to the wire, and they beat Miami. So, are the Johnnies?
A 3-point win against Cal. They were down to Bowling Green for most of that game. They had to basically come back to win it. To be honest, I didn't watch the Loyola. That's Loyola Maryland, not Chicago. There's a few minutes in between.
TCU's a good win. I mean, really, Rocco mentioned it.
But here, look at this upcoming schedule. They're not going to lose again until maybe conference play. St. Mary's, Princeton.
Cal is actually the most embarrassing win of all those. I mean, it really is. Cal's awful. So, I mean, you know. But, St. John's, they're doing what they're doing quite well for what we thought the Johnnies would do. I think they have compiled a resume if they do decent, 500 or better in the Big East. I think their name could be called in March because of these wins. And, you know, VCU and Rutgers and Georgia Tech will fade dramatically in the net, I think. But VCU and Rutgers, who knows? I think they'll still be viewed as at least tier two wins at the end of the day.
And I just highlighted there, by the way, they do have a non-conference game in February at Duke.
Ooh, Well, last year they beat Duke. I don't think the return trip to Cameron will be as nice.
Last year it was the most preposterous thing. They beat Duke and they won at Villanova, and they did virtually nothing else.
They're the Glass Tiger. Glass Tiger.
Rocco, let me bring in here. Here's the upcoming schedule in the Big East. We discussed some of these games already, although a couple we could circle here is Temple Villanova Wednesday night, and of course the Xavier Cincinnati game on Saturday.
Yeah, Temple had two really nice road wins last week, so they're going for three in a row. And the way Villanova's been kind of messing around with teams that they're supposedly supposed to crush, that could be really interesting when you mix in the rivalry aspect of it. Looking ahead to the weekend, I think, Villanova's got another one of those games with St. Joe's where if they tinker around, they could be in a little bit of trouble. And then Xavier-Cincinnati, a game always to circle just because – we know the history, and there something will happen worth noting, even if it's a blowout.
Right. Yeah.
we talked about on Twitter today. But go ahead, David.
There was I guess about 10 or 15 years ago, there was a string of years where Cincinnati was ranked high, like single digits high, and Xavier beat them in these incredible games year after year after year. And it really, I think, kind of – elevated the rivalry into the national consciousness. I'd say 5 out of the last 6 years or maybe more, the games have been eye-gougingly painful to watch, just really horrible, not closely, poorly played games. But they more than make up for it with the post-game antics that we've seen.
Let's keep going here. We got a bunch more conferences to get through here, and I want to swing over to the Big 12. Tytel, let me bring you in here. We've got two undefeated teams in this conference here, both Texas Tech and Kansas. And how are you starting to pay attention to the Texas Tech yet?
You have to. I believe they've beaten Nebraska, and who is the other team they beat in non-conference play that impressed me? USC, both by 15-plus points, as well as Memphis by over 10 points. What amazes me is that they lost so much from last year's tournament team. They have one returning starter in Jarrett Culver, completely new lineup, and it's working. Like, kudos, Chris Beard. I don't know how he did it, but he did it.
And a year ago today, we weren't really – I mean, Texas Tech, I don't know at what point they cracked the rankings, but coming in the last year, we weren't really big on them either. Chris Beard is just got the Midas touch, and you kind of wonder, is he one of the more underrated coaches in the nation?
Yeah, he's done a great job. Obviously, Kansas is what Kansas is, but Rocco, the other game that was, I think was a big surprise on Saturday, Marquette knocking off Kansas State by 12.
Yeah, and Kansas State, you know, they came in pretty much unscathed. I don't think they had a game in single digits even coming in, and they won the, I believe it was the Cayman tournament, all those games, I think, by 15-plus. So, but we knew coming into the season Marquette had some really good talent coming back. Marcus Howard's, of course, a player of the year candidate. I didn't get a chance to see the game, but but Marquette, it looks like, finally realized some of that potential and got it all to start working on in a home game. So, good win for them. And, you know, the other interesting game, I think, on Saturday was Wichita State-Baylor, where it was 44-15 at halftime. And Baylor came storming back, making it interesting, and still lost by 8. But that was a fun one to follow, because I think at one point they were, I don't know, it was like 38-8 or something.
That was a fun one to follow. But another one that was Ajobi, Kansas, yeah. I just mentioned them. They struggled mightily with not a very good Stanford team.
No, they did not. And you know, Kansas, not now, in full disclosure, the J&G doesn't take into account a whole lot on margin of victory, because by the end of the year, it's not – that's just a factor that the committee has not, I've found, to be looking at. So they don't get punished. Instead, they beat a Pac-12 team, you know, in the raids. The end of the year, that's how people will look at this game. But Kansas, you play overtime over and over again with people like that. You're going to lose the Baylor. Yeah. The Baylor team we just mentioned. You're going to lose these games. Kansas can't afford to do that in their conference, because they will get bit. But at the same time, Kansas, you know, a lot of people say, well, name me, I heard this, you know, name me four teams better than Kansas. You have to really struggle with the resume, their resume. You have to really struggle to name four better teams in resume than Kansas. I actually can name three, but you debate on that fourth.
I see that the magic of scoreboards right there. Iowa State just went final, beat North Dakota State tonight. So a little magic showing up on the screen. upcoming schedule here, David, in the Big 12, kind of a week from last week, but we've got some pretty good ones, including the, I believe it's the other half, the West Virginia-Florida game, the other half of the Jimmy V.
Yeah.
As well as the TCU-SMU game and TCU-USC. Big week for TCU.
Yeah, a couple interesting home games here for Kansas. I know that these are bye games, but they're not – they're playing two of the better teams from under-the-radar conferences. At least they're not – Wofford pretty good. I'm not saying Wofford's going to step in and beat them, but if you're going to play a bye game, that one. And New Mexico State having a much better-than-expected year if you've been following under the radar. So – I kind of like that. I mean, I don't think Kansas will be challenged, but I kind of like that they're playing games like that. And you kind of mentioned Oklahoma got Wichita State coming in, and we got the backyard brawl.
And Houston at Oklahoma State, just Houston, one of those few undefeated teams that's left out there. So it's a test for them. But let's shoot over to – well, Tytel, let me bring you in here on your favorite conference. And then Rockwell, your comments on it as well. No, it's not the Ivy League. It is the – stink fest that is the Pac-12. look at these wonderful scores here. You see Houston beating Oregon. You see St. Mary's took out Cal. New Mexico State took out Washington State. We don't even see what the Oregon lost to Texas Southern on there. What do you do with this league right now, Tytel? What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, who it was who said the Beavers were actually going to be exceeding expectations this year? Oh, wait, that was
okay.
Me.
Okay.
6-1, wow. My Quakers. It's early. They haven't beaten anybody of note. Wildcats look great in UConn. I thought about going. I should have went in retrospect. I really thought we were going to lose after traveling across the country and playing a good team, but somehow hung on for the win. Rocco, I don't know about the Washington schools, though. I think it's too early to tell, but what do you think?
Well, I think the Cougars are exactly what we thought. I'm impressed they didn't get blown out at New Mexico State. That's a tough place to go down and play, especially given the fact that the Cougars are probably the worst team in the league. But, yeah, and the Washington so far has been a lot of the same from last year. The good news about that is Coach Hopkins is really good at coaching late-game situations, and we've been able to pull games out like the one last night. It was tied with a minute and a half left. Drew a couple key fouls, iced it with some free throws, but UCSB is still missing their best player, Mr. Hedinger. And so, I mean, the UCSB team that was out there last night, that should have been like a 14-point-plus win, and it was a nail-biter all the way through. So I'm concerned a lot about Washington because there's really not Dickerson and Noel are putting up numbers, but there's not really in the balance that I think a lot of the prognosticators during the off-season were projecting. Now, that could change later in the year, but so far it looks like more of the same. So at this point, I think across the league, UCLA, they're hanging on for a resume. Arizona, your guys are now starting to build that resume. And then Arizona State, of course, is the pride and joy of the league because they have lost with a huge game on Friday.
A huge schedule coming up for Arizona State, actually.
yeah. So
four in a row are going to be.
I don't see an at large as far as what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
Four in a row are going to be brutal. Nevada at the Staples Center, at Georgia, at Vandy, host Kansas. Good luck.
Give it 2 out of 4 because the league needs it.
The league does need it. Here's the entire upcoming schedule, though, Joe, before the Pac-12. Your thoughts on – no, it's not on the screen. Okay, forget it.
Maybe we'll get up the screen there. I will strongly dispute Rocco saying Washington State's the worst. I still have my vote for Cal.
Okay, I'll give you Cal.
Well, obviously Wednesday night, Washington got tagged.
Wazoo's
out of the SEC is Georgia. So – don't give me Arizona State should be able to take care of the Bulldogs. This isn't the gridiron. This is the hard court. So.
Rocco, your Washington team is at Gonzaga Wednesday.
Oh gosh. It's going to be like I'm lucky I'm in New York this week because it's an 11 p.m. start. If it gets ugly, I can just go to bed.
Rocco, real quick, because I know you know this and most of us are aware of it, but for those watching that aren't aware, tell us just a brief, very abridged history of the great relationship Gonzaga and Washington have and how it got so nasty that they actually quit playing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is a very deep story. It goes way back, but when Mark Few took over for Don Monson and Romar hired Cameron Dollar to be the assistant coach, there was a big-time recruit that I think everybody's familiar with, ended up playing for North Carolina, named Marvin Williams, who was from the Seattle area. Cameron Dollar, being from L.A., a lot of the schools in that area, they do private workouts for the recruits down there, and it's kind of like an honor system. Nobody really reports the violations to the NCAA. So he did the same thing when he got to Seattle and got ratted out on by Gonzaga. And you can go back and Google this from early 2000s. Cameron Dollar ended up having to get suspended for half of a season, loses half of his salary, and the feud was on. And that was actually reported by Ray Giacoletti, who's coached Utah and some other programs, but was Mark Few's number one assistant at the time. And then that eventually led to the discontinuation of the rivalry, which lasted 4 years. And finally, some makeup was done, and just the last couple of years, it's back now. But, between the fan bases and because of the fact Gonzaga for 20 years now has been what Gonzaga is, what we know it now, it's there's a lot of bad blood. And when it's in Spokane, it's usually ugly, so – that's why I made my comments about going to bed maybe by half time.
Yeah. David, one of the games I want to take a quick look at before is it's kind of on Saturday, one of our favorite rivalries, Utah-BYU, the Holy War.
Yeah. Again, I don't think there's a more bitter rivalry. There were always four that I would rank the most bitter. And when I say bitter, I don't mean the most important. Like, that's clearly Duke-North Carolina. But the most, in terms of just straight-up bitterness – I would say it was West Virginia Pitt. That one has cooled off big time. Kansas, Missouri don't play anymore. Louisville, Kentucky, it's that one's still really bitter. But this one, I think this one's number one. It's not the most important. It'll never resonate nationally the way that it does. But I think this is the most bitter rivalry. There's been – it was discontinued for a year. None of us like to see that, but it was because of the incidents and altercations that were happening game after game after game. I think in the game before it was discontinued, there was just a blatant flagrant two-foul punch, and it was the third or fourth year in a row it had happened. There's been incidents at the football games. There's been incidents at the basketball games. I mean, this is a different level of hate. And it is hate. It isn't even fun hate. I literally think they hate it.
It's a war.
Yeah.
Joby, let me bring you back in. Let's head over to the SEC here. You can see the scores there. The SEC had a pretty good week, only a few losses there. The games in red are losses. The games in blue are the wins. But a pretty good week for the SEC after it had some struggles in the first few weeks of the season, although they didn't really play anybody either, did they?
No, you know what? The SEC's shown well. I think. I mean, we talked about Auburn, you know, a few weeks ago. You know, if there's anything such as a good loss, they had it. Yeah, you know, they had it with Duke. But this is this conference has not completely shown what I wanted. But it's not like it's embarrassed itself either. Yeah. You know, I think the big flashing point was actually not this past week, but the week before with LSU Florida State. That would have shown where this conference is in relation to the big boys like the ACC. You're taking a Florida State team that's about, you know, sixth, seventh best team in their conference versus a similarly situated LSU, and it's a tight game, but Florida State did come out on top. That's kind of where I view the SEC generally is it's got a number of good tournament teams. Auburn and Tennessee in particular get my attention. Kentucky will be there. Sorry, Big Blue. Don't freak out over the net too much, buddies. you'll be there. But it's not an elite – it's not the elite conference. It is a very good conference that will give multiple bids.
And again, Andy Handurahan, you might remember, played 79 minutes in that game.
Since it wasn't much last week, let's take a look at what's coming up this upcoming week here in the SEC. Rocco, what are we circling here? What games that we haven't discussed yet are you circling here on the SEC calendar, if any?
Well, Michigan State at Florida, and tomorrow night's Florida-West Virginia game. Talk about a big week for the Gators. You know, the Gators had chances earlier this year, and they've blown them all. Starting with the first night in Tallahassee. I'll actually be there tomorrow at the Jimmy V Classic. So I think, you know, everything I see on paper about Florida, I really like the roster. So I'm just curious if it's we're just waiting for them to come together, or if they're really just – Not that great of a club, but typically, historically, even with this coach, they've been able to put it together. So we'll see what happens this week there. Also, very curious about this Arkansas team.
Yes.
And because I didn't expect much of them this year, but they've really been impressing me every time out.
Me too.
They've got a Western Kentucky, a pretty interesting game, and a long trip out to CSU, which is funny because their football team made that trip this year, which is a little bizarre.
Yeah, that's a tough place to win also. This should be a good test. We should learn a lot about this Arkansas team this week.
Yep. And
go ahead.
Yeah, just one last comment. I don't know if you guys touched on this last week, but with Vanderbilt losing Garland, their five-star point guard, that is a huge problem for the SEC just because Vanderbilt, even if they didn't make the tournament, we're going to be a tough win for anybody, especially at Vandy. And now I think Vandy turns into more of like a Missouri where they're just not the same without their star. And some of that is having a ripple effect across the league.
And we've had a lot of very good matchups so far this year involving teams that people have projected potential Final Four caliber teams. Titel, we've got another one coming up Sunday, Tennessee and Gonzaga.
I can't say that's the game I care about on Sunday, but yes, it's going to be a
fan. At Alabama, come on.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I think it's easy to travel across the country and win games just because we did it in UConn by 4 points. I assure you it's not. Tennessee Gonzaga is going to be great because they bring back so much talent from both schools. You have coaches and Rick Barnes and Mark Few have been there forever. Just to follow quickly on Rockwood's point, with Darius Garland, I think Vandy had a 20-win chance, NCAA tourney chance. I will go on record. Vanderbilt is not making the NCAA tournament. You look at the net rating, 66. That's going to plummet. There's no – they're not making the tournament.
The problem that I'm seeing there, just to follow up on that point, is that we are losing those middle-of-the-pack SEC teams. So it's looking more like a five-bid league than the eight-bid league we thought at the beginning of the season by the injuries to Vandy and to Missouri and the like.
Well, well stated, Chad. That's what I was trying to say in about 20 cents, as you said.
and that's where it's going to be important for a team like Arkansas to step up, somebody that we didn't expect.
Let's, David, quick look over at the American Conference. An undefeated team here, Houston. What about them? 6-0. They've had a big win over Rio Grande Valley by 5 points. And
I still like this Houston team. I was big on them, or bigger on them than most people coming into the year. I don't, despite being 6-0, I don't know how good they actually are. They did sort of, I mean, they sprinted out to a huge lead against Oregon, but they couldn't really hold on. Oregon, they did win the game, but Oregon kind of came back after being down by more than 20. Cincinnati has rattled off 7 in a row since losing their opener at home to Ohio State. And are they starting to come to life? And they got to – well, I mean, we'll look at that with the games coming up. But I think this is sort of a – if the American is going to make a case for itself collectively, this is the week to do it. Houston's got a big game. It slips my mind who they're playing. You got
I'm putting it on the screen right here.
I'm sorry?
I'm putting it up on the screen here. There you go.
Okay. Well, not Lamar.
At Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State.
Yeah, Oklahoma State. That's a game that if you – I mean, that they need to win. If you're a tournament team, you need to win that game. Cincinnati at home against Xavier. They need to win that game. They're at home. They're playing a bubble team at best, or at least a team that hasn't shown that it's a tournament team yet. You got Temple. They might be swinging over their heads playing at Villanova, but Connecticut's got a big schedule. I mean, this is a big week for this conference. You got the SMU-TCU. I don't know what Tulsa's doing. I don't care. But, I get the sense that collectively for this conference, this is a really big and important week. I don't know if you all agree or not. But
I would hope that Cincinnati does not look ahead too much.
Yeah, they got a big one.
Well off, because Northern Kentucky is a game team.
Yeah,
They I'm not saying they'll win the game, but if Cincinnati thinks they can just sleepwalk in advance of the Queen City, you know, showdown, they are sorely mistaken.
Mountain West Conference, Rocco, you being our West Coast guy, let's start with Nevada, of course. First of all, they see that they actually split the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge 5-5. You can see some of those games there, but Nevada picked up their wins at Loyola and then at USC as well.
Nevada looks what we thought they would be, and my only doubt was just the fact that they didn't play very well in the exhibition game against UW. But they've been everything we thought they would be before that, and now I'm really intrigued by this Arizona State game on Friday. We'll come to that later, but I do want to mention a team I'm incredibly impressed by, which is Utah State.
Yes,
and because UC Irvine's had a really nice little resume building, and they went in there and just crushed them. Whatever night that was, Thursday or Friday last week.
It was Saturday night, Rocco, and they crushed them, and they were beating them so bad that even the video guy was messing up over and over and over if you were attempting to watch that game.
I'm glad that you were, because I was unavailable that day, so thank you. And they beat St. Mary's out in Vegas. The one loss was Arizona State, and that was also in Vegas. And I believe that game was down to the wire.
It was,
And they actually will have – I know BYU's been struggling, but I think Emery's back for BYU. He's coming back for the game on Wednesday. So Utah State will have another tough challenge there. Weber State just beat BYU, so that's not one that they can overlook. And then a game at Houston before conference. You know, so I think what I'm trying to do is figure out is if they can win a couple more of these before non-league play wraps up. Do they have a shot in at large? Practically, probably not. But it's a great story, and it'd be fun if we could keep it going for a few more months.
I mean, the fact is here that they really don't have any margin for error with this schedule.
Exactly.
I mean, look, they've already got five bad wins on there, and those are the wins – And then when you see what they've got in their conference with teams like San Jose State and Wyoming that are not going to be very good, they're going to need at least one win against Nevada this year if they won that.
Yeah, you look at their marquee, like they go to BYU and to Houston. Those are teams that typically play very well at home. If they get both of those and beat Nevada and then only stub their toe once or twice, that might be enough.
Let's go back and Ty, tell them, bring you back in for the upcoming schedule here in the Mountain West. We can see what Nevada and Utah State have coming ahead here. We already mentioned Utah State at BYU and Weber State. Nevada's got the Arizona State game on Friday, though.
Yeah, I think that the one that jumps out to me is actually sticking in the California region with our West Coast guy. San Diego State going to Cal. I think the Aztecs, I don't know if they should win that game. I think they can win that game.
They better win that game.
I think they'll be the better team in that game, but that could be a battle of undefeateds here Friday night, Nevada-Arizona State, so definitely one worth circling here for your Friday evening.
Yeah, and then Wednesday night, Chad, we've got the Front Range. We love the Front Range.
Denver at Air Force. Joby, West Coast Conference, Gonzaga, number one team in the nation, still undefeated. Another real impressive performance at Creighton, I thought.
Yes, I mean, look, I love, and yes, the Zags have a street name, but they did it by going on the road and being able to have people schedule. And people always complain at Utah State, which we just talked about, basically lost a bit of a few years back precisely because they didn't schedule and they complained that no one will play us. Then you look at Gonzaga. You do have to go on the road. You're not getting home and home if you're Utah State. Sorry, you're not. Life's not fair. Gonzaga knew that. Mark Few knew that. 15 years ago, and they go on the road and they win. They go on the road and they develop, and now they can get home and homes if they want them. Going all the way to Spokane, not an easy place to go, because they've developed into a household name that can draw tickets, that can draw, they are an attractive team.
They are.
It's like this Creighton team game. We all know about the Duke game from a few weeks past. This Zags team has now built a program that, expands beyond just, oh, aren't they a cute story? This is a legitimate Final Four team. And the one downside they'll have is that they play in the West Coast, which doesn't have a St. Mary's this year. BYU, I don't know if BYU is even what BYU usually is, but they'll probably win in the kennel like they always do. But what will happen is – they might get soft playing against a soft schedule. That's my one fear for them.
I'll tell you that, Loyola Marymount, San Francisco, even San Diego, a little more life than normal this year.
Right.
Maybe a few more challenges there. And you've got to remember, they still have Washington, Tennessee, North Carolina their next three games.
No. But those are December games. No. This is – I love their preseason. They do exactly what you want to do preseason. And you're right on Loyola and San Francisco. Loyola Marymount and San Francisco are much better than they have been in the past. So I do retract a little bit of it. But I still think that the West Coast generally doesn't do them favors prepping because they go 2 months without playing that North Carolina, that Duke.
The protected seed caliber teams. Joby, that's a fair point, and it's a lot of things that a lot of people point out about Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga got this reputation of being overrated and underachieving that was largely undeserved. There were 2 years they went out of the NCAA tournament early. 1 year, I think it was Nevada that knocked them out when they were a two seed. And then another year they got knocked out in the round of 32 as a one seed by Wichita State. Well, that Wichita State team went to the Final Four and then brought everybody back and was pretty much undefeated the next year. So maybe that was more of a case of Wichita being good than Gonzaga being bad. And if you look at Gonzaga's tournament history, they have won more games as a poorer seeded team than they have lost as a better seeded team. They've actually exceeded their expectations in the tournament. Like the year they were a one seed, they went all the way to the national title game. So it's rare that they lose as the better seeded team.
Rocco, this San Francisco team, only one loss. It was to Buffalo over the weekend at the out in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Only one game coming this week at Cal. The metrics are starting to love this team, though. Is there something going on here?
I like this team a lot, too. I got to see them a couple times last year. I haven't seen them yet this year. But I mean, I think if you look at their results, they've crushed everybody except for Buffalo and Harvard. Harvard gave them a little bit of a game out in San Francisco, but they controlled it. And then the Buffalo game, Buffalo controlled most of the game, but San Francisco didn't give up, and they kept battling. And I know Buffalo's a tough team. Obviously, I saw them in person last month. So I think they have some staying power, like you said. I think today they're clearly, in my opinion, the number two team in the league. And overall, this league, which will be different for Gonzaga than many of the past several years, is the depth. I think you go all the way down to even Pepperdine. If you have Pepperdine 8th or Pacific 8th, everybody except for Santa Clara and Portland, you could get a pretty tough test from this year. Versus, I can't remember the league being that deep where Gonzaga, when they go on the road to the top 8, yes, they're going to be big favorites, but they could potentially get beat. They are favored probably to go 18-0 on KenPom, but the depth of the league is not going to drop off at like 300 now. It's going to drop off at closer to 150, and that's exciting.
Well, and I think that might be a factor of just what the league has done in recent years to upgrade. I mean, you're looking at the name coaches that are coming in, from Herb Sendek to Terry Porter to Damon Stoudemire. I mean, they're
– Lorenzo Romar,
yeah.
Mark Hughes, buddy.
That's right.
Tytel, we have to do it, so let's do a real quick look at it here. The Atlantic 10 Conference. Is there anything worth discussing here in this league that's now on the screen there? Or when you have Fordham that high, is it just move on?
I think we can be happy for Fordham at 6-1 and call it a day.
Okay.
But loaded records there. But, yeah, like Fordham really is kind of a story. This is a really, really historically awful, awful.
But what about this St. Louis team? Real nice win against Butler, even if it was a home game.
Yeah, they had the win against Butler, and they had another nice one out at Seton Hall. If anybody has shown signs of life at St. Louis, two decent wins – 6-1, they're the only team that's looked like an NCAA tournament team. Now, Dayton has looked it, but they don't have the results. Like, they led Mississippi State, who's pretty good, for a good portion of the game. They actually made Virginia sweat a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, but I think Dayton's problem is that they really, really, really needed that Mississippi State game, didn't get it, and anything short of running the table, they're going to be sweating or just not in at all.
Well, they do have Auburn coming up on Saturday on the road. So if they pick that one up, that will forgive all sins, I think. I just don't think they're good enough to win that game.
It's not that they have any sins. It's that they just didn't get the meaty wins that they needed, and no one in this league has. You wanted to like VCU. They played the Johnnies really close. It was their only loss. But then they lost to Old Dominion, who is god-awful.
Interesting game, Joby, on Sunday maybe. This Oregon State at St. Louis game. Oregon State might have a little bit of life, and St. Louis could be a decent win for them.
Yeah, I like St. Louis at home pretty strongly there, actually. Okay. I can't believe I'm picking an A-10 team over a Power 5 team, but I am there. At least I hope that's the only A-10 over Power 5 team that happens on Sunday. with VCU Virginia on tap.
But go ahead, Joey.
Yeah, but go ahead. Yeah.
Now, I was going to say I want to move on to two other teams that we want to discuss here. Neither of these teams are under the radar anymore. I'm going to put them both on the screen here. Both in the top 25 and at least one poll. On the left there, you've got the Buffalo Bulls from the Mid-American. On the right, we've got the Furman Paladins. Welcome to the top 25 for the first time ever.
Woo-hoo!
Top 25 in the AP poll. 8-0, but let's start with Buffalo. David, your thoughts on Buffalo? They did get that nice win out in Belfast, the two wins out.
Yeah, I still really like this team. I don't think they're as good as their ranking. I think they're deserving of the ranking, if that's what you want to call it. But, you know, San Francisco, a really good team. Does anybody think that they're within 4 points of being a top 20 team? San Francisco, probably not. The win at West Virginia, really solid. West Virginia's kind of been disappointing, though. And then Southern Illinois, that was the one that really got me, because West Virginia, I was like, well, they had a really good night. When they went to Southern Illinois and won, I'm like, oh, man, that's the two really good teams that they've beaten in true road games. But not to down Buffalo, I'm still very impressed with what they've done, but some of the teams they've beaten haven't really been holding up their end of the bargain.
Well, the good news is they got tests still coming up at Syracuse, at Marquette in December here. So got that. Tytel, how about the idea that the Furman Paladins are a top 25 team? Everything you said, say that.
Fake news, my friends. They do get credit for being Villanova, of course, because this is the two-time champion in the past 3 years. But if you look a little closer, they beat Gardner-Webb by two at home in overtime. They beat Western Carolina, who's not a top 300 team, by two in double overtime at home. They beat Bob Jones and North Georgia and Southern Wesleyan, who are not D1 teams. They beat a good Loyola Chicago team by two. This is a paper champion. They might go 12-0 because they got four cupcakes ahead. I will be stunned if they win at LSU on December 21st.
Well, yeah, that Western Carolina game, and they were down for a lot of that game. They actually kind of needed to – I mean, not they weren't getting blown out or anything, but they did not have it at hand. And my theory is the concession stand people that run that got some sort of word to the team. It's like, hey, can you help us out? Like, if you guys go up 20-30, everybody's going to leave and we're not going to make any money. Is there anything you can do to make it more compelling and exciting?
You know, the thing about Furman here, though, is, yeah, now they need to do this amazing run, and they got, yeah, even a loss to LSU, because you get that Nova win. Let's say you lose to LSU. If Furman solidly doesn't have to fully run the table but comes close to running the table, they might actually still have a shot for the mere fact that what I was bemoaning probably a little incorrectly about the West Coast Conference is not true here. Because you have Wofford that we've already mentioned in passing. Sanford's a decent program. And UNC Greensboro gave Kentucky all they could handle. The fact of the matter is the conference, the Southern, is not bad. And so at least at the top.
Right, Joby. The thing is, I wouldn't be surprised. Ty Tell is absolutely right. Because, yes, I've seen more of Furman this year than I think I've seen in the previous 2 or 3 years combined. the win at Loyola was really exciting. The win at Villanova in overtime after blowing a lead was off the charts. But he's absolutely right. To be sweating out Gardner-Webb and Western Carolina, and once you can kind of explain it away as just an off night, but they've also done it twice. Now, they did get the wins, but eventually, statistically, you're a numbers guy. Aren't they going to drop games to Greensboro and Wofford and East Tennessee State and Samford and these other teams that have also looked pretty good in this conference?
Well, and that's a very – that is, of course, Val, but that's why they've got an opportunity, though. Normally, a Furman doesn't have an opportunity. They right now – have an opportunity. Yes, it'd be great to beat LSU. It'd be great. I agree with John. I don't see it happening. But who knows? And even if they lost to LSU, because you have the big win that'll be to a close-to-protected seed team in Villanova in the bank, you have a shot, but you have to do with it. I don't know how many games they play in the Southern, but let's hypothetically say
it's 18. It's a true double.
They've got to be 16-2 or 17-1, and that's likely not going to happen for all the reasons that you and John give. But if they do, that's the key, is if you do, you actually have a shot in that large bid, which,
oh, yeah.
Did we really think Furman had a shot and that large bid entering even after the Villanova game?
And Joby, here's one of the things I look at. Look at the predictive metrics here, which are generally the more accurate metrics this early in the season.
Right.
They hate them. They still hate him. Yeah. The KenPom, Sagarin, BPI, these numbers do not think this is even close to a tournament team. And I tend to think that those numbers are more accurate. Compare them to Buffalo, for example, over here. That's a tournament team numbers.
Right.
Yeah, and for those of you that are watching under the radar, man, why are you beating up on these teams? Because we're treating them the way we treat everybody else on the Hoops HD report. I don't think Furman finishes higher than fourth in the SoCon. But until it happens, that's my supposition.
Yeah.
At this point in time, they have won all their games, and they have two monster wins on that resume. So we shall see.
Let's go ahead and pull this down here, and let's run through any other thoughts for the evening, any other final thoughts. And Rocco, let me start with you. I know we didn't give you a chance to speak about those last two teams either, so any thoughts on them or anything else?
Yeah, I'll comment on Buffalo real quick. Okay. I got a chance to see them, and I was thoroughly impressed. And it wasn't just because the score or anything like that. It was more the fact that when they played West Virginia right before Southern Illinois, they were in a shootout, up-and-down game. They won 99-94, and then they came out to Carbondale, and they played in a defensive struggle. They had to completely adjust the way that they looked to push play. And Nate Oates just made all the right adjustments. He plugged in the right pieces at the right time. They've got an arsenal of players to work with. Their best player arguably could be Nick Perkins, who doesn't even start. He's a beast that comes off the bench. He's the sixth man, 6'10". And, you know, I look at a guy like Nick Perkins, and I'm looking at all these Pac-12 teams. He would probably start at center for almost all of them except Oregon. And so, or maybe UCLA. But, like, they have a very, very impressive team and very mature team that can handle tough situations. So I think, you know, I'm kind of going, putting all my chips in on Buffalo, to be honest, from what I saw.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I do like this Buffalo team a lot, and a lot better than this Furman team. Tytel, any other thoughts?
It's early, but I'm going to already announce my pick for transfer of the year, and it is Brandon Clark, the junior shooting guard of the Zags. He comes out of San Jose State where he was a good player. He was not, like, conference player of the year or anything. And Killian Tilly goes out, and all he does is come into the front court. He's got Hachimura, he's got Norvell, all these great players. 17 points a game, 8 boards a game, 4 blocks a game. Keeping in mind he's playing teams like Duke. He's shooting over 77% from the field. But he's not just a dunker. He's also made both of his 3-point shots this year. It's only December, but I think he has a stranglehold on the award for transfer of the year and will be a huge reason why the Zags should end up with the number one seed, and then we'll see what happens to them in March.
I'd be shocked at this point if they didn't end up with the number one seed unless they, you know, completely went belly up somehow. I just don't see that happening. Next 3 games are key, but I think they're good enough to win at least 2 of them. Joby?
Yeah, I think Texas Tech's got a pretty darn good one, too, as the reason why they're there. But I can't disagree with John fully. My message is to our friends in Lexington, Kentucky.
Who are they?
It's a good way to get hate.
We have friends there?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of this.
I can't figure out your team fully. I actually think it might have a chance of getting up into the protected seed area. But until you actually do something more than sweat out UNC Greensboro and get boat raced by the Duke Blue Devils, a good team, but boat raced by any team, please do not delude yourself by looking at AP voters who care more about recruiting rankings than actual real metrics. The net, I think, has them a little low. But the fact of the matter is, it is mathematical. It's not BS. Your resume is empty. Furman has a better resume than you, even with Bob Jones being stuck in the middle of it. The fact of the matter is, until you get to the meat of your schedule, stop complaining. And guess what? Louisville will be a nice – component to end that that poor schedule.
Yeah. By the way, in terms of friends in Lexington, David, we do have Sullivan University, Transylvania University, Lexington Theological Seminary. Lots of friends in Lexington. We love all those schools.
And so, have VMI in Lexington.
Scheduling all 3 of those.
There you go.
David, your thoughts.
I kind of think that this is unique. I don't know. Maybe this has happened before and we just don't remember it. Has anybody ever started the season off without receiving a single preseason vote and then ended up as a protected seed 2 years in a row? Because that is the trajectory Texas Tech is on. That's really my only thought right now is just how for the second year in a row, they're not just passing expectations, they're crushing it to the point to where if in October I told you that I thought Texas Tech was going to be ranked in the top 15 in December, you would have had me sent to a home somewhere.
Well, I mean, do we need to start talking Chris Beard seriously, Coach of the Year?
Yeah, I thought he had a very good case for it a year ago.
Yeah. I guess on that note then, on behalf of Joby Fortson, John Tytel, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, make sure you check him out at bracketeer.org. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again Wednesday night with Under the Radar, next week with another Hoops HD report. Talk to you again real soon.